Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started. Good evening. I'd like to welcome everyone to Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Leanne, and I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
For those who care to join, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all those in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple AA simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve a common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we're going to be discussing steps 5, 6, and 7. And I'd like to welcome our panel this evening. We have Daniel and Vida. If y'all help me introduce them. You're welcome. So we're going to start on page 72. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory.
Step 4.
Sorry.
Second half.
Step 4, part 2.
Step 4, second half. Let me backtrack here. Part 2 of step 4. That's right, we're doing sex inventory and fear inventory. So we're going to start with the fear inventory. Yeah, that's right. Step 4 was made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Page 67. Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we, ourselves, set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble.
I'm Daniel, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Daniel.
Yeah, whenever I was doing my inventory, it was totally based off of fear. You know, I realized after going through and writing down all the things that I've done, and you know, everything was written down, and I was sitting there looking at it and going through the packet that my sponsor had given me. After I wrote those things down, I was supposed to go back through there and describe what feeling or thing drove me to do those things. And 9 out of 10 times, it was fear. Fear of success, fear of failure, fear of what you might think, fear of what I might think. You know, I was fear-stricken and fear-driven in every aspect of my life whenever it came down to active alcoholism. That's the basis of why I drank so much. You know, I couldn't live a day without being afraid of something. Of course, back then I didn't know it was fear. I just figured it was, you know, I'm a man and that's what I do. You know, that's how I was raised. You know, all the men in my family, that's what they do, so I must have to do it too. You know, I didn't realize that it was fear in all different forms. Ego, everything that I can think of had fear bracketed off to the side of it. And it just, it was astonishing to look at after going through it. So, thanks. That's all I got.
Thanks for sharing. Hi, I'm Vitamin Alcoholic.
Hey, Vitamin.
And I'm just going to double up a little bit what Danielle just said. The first time I did my step four, and you know, I kind of wrote out all the basic fears that you know, I can recognize. You know, I could recognize the fear of success, or could recognize the fear of loss, or the fear of failure. But what I really failed to recognize that my basic everyday actions were ridden with fears. That, you know, they just stem, one action stems from another, from third, and it's all coming from fear. So my manipulating, controlling, lying, it's all coming from fear. You know, it's all self-will run riot. And, you know, I had no idea. And when they started talking about, you know, acting, doing God's will, I didn't understand what that means until I really looked at the fear inventory, where if I abandon the fear and turn into trust to God, I stop manipulating, I stop controlling, and I stop lying. But it was a huge process, and I've been through steps quite a few times, and very interestingly, every time it keeps on getting like deeper and deeper and changes, and you know, they say peeling the onion. First, I didn't get what that even means, but you know, ultimately, I discovered for me that all my fears stem from one basic fear. It's like a tree, and it has a root, and that root is that God doesn't exist, and He won't take care of me. And when I get to that point, if I do, because I still do, it's a process, back and forth process, I go back to step two and revisit what my higher power is. And I, you know, I look at the evidence, and I look at all that stuff. So, you know, it's a continuous process, because, you know, I still face situations. Now, drinking is not really a problem today, but there's other things that happen in my life that can lead me fast to drinking, you know, the complicating my life and such. Anytime I act out in fear, I have to go back to step two and just redo it. And it's kind of like a circle for me. So yes, fear is a big one. It's a, you know, it paralyzes me from living my life. And if I don't have this program, I act out. If I don't keep up with this program, I act out continuously on this one intense emotion. And I guess that's all I have for now.
Thank you. Okay, on page 68. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis. The basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role He assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear.
All right. Well, this step, I wouldn't have been, you know, this part of the fourth step, I wouldn't have been able to do if I wouldn't have completely made that decision in step three, which is making a decision to turn my life and my will over to the care of God as we all understand Him, or as I understand Him. You know, if I couldn't have grasped that, then I couldn't have grasped this. Because then I would be relying on myself to take care of things. And step three, let me go back. Step three, for me, I mind-boggled that thing to death because it was just like I didn't get it, you know. And my sponsor sat down and said, read the step. You know, it's a decision. Just make a decision and let's move forward. I was like, all right, well, I can do that. I made a decision and I moved forward. Now we're in step four. And when it came down to this, and it's telling me that, you know, basically a spiritual way is the only way for me to get better. I always thought of, you know, man depending upon whatever they believed in as a weakness. I turned my back on God and everything else whenever He started taking people out of my lives, or out of my life. You know, I was told to pray and I did, and they still left. You know, so I was like, you know what, if He's going to do this, then I'm not doing anything for Him, type of thing. But it's kind of funny because He's saved me a million times that I can't even think of. You know, I'm still here and alive and breathing because of Him. And the little belief that I did have that was in the back of my brain, shut and locked in a door somewhere. And, you know, just that was enough for Him to say, you know, I'm going to save you this time and this time and this time. And then going through the step and having my sponsor sit there and tell me, you know, the higher power, the God that you believed in when you were growing up, just like the shoes you wore back then, isn't going to fit you today. And it took me, you know, a couple of seconds to realize what He was saying. So all I had to do was come to terms with something that I can understand today and turn all these things over to Him and rely on Him instead of doubting. I think it says in our literature somewhere that you can't have faith and doubt as well, or something along those lines. And that kind of hit me pretty hard too. You know, so I either have faith or I don't have faith. God is, you know, my higher power is either everything or it's nothing. There's no middle ground for me. I don't have that luxury today. You know, it's either do this the way it's written or I'm going to drink again. And that's how real it is for me. So if all it's asking me is to believe in, you know, a power greater than myself and to guide me through this process and turn these things over that I, you know, obviously don't want to do anymore, then that's what I have to do. So that's what I did. Thanks.
So when I first came in, I was, you know, I was so ridden with fear. I had no idea how to live sober, no idea how to do anything sober. And I remember I didn't really trust people in the rooms, but I trusted the AA as an institution because it worked so well. I mean, the results were there. So what I did, I picked up a bunch of AA literature. And my favorite one was As Bill Sees It, and every page that you flip on fear, because it's like an index, and there's word fear, and there's a bunch of little pages that you can flip to it, and it talks about, like, from, it's gathered from all a literature, and every single time it was faith. Faith is the opposite of fear. That's the only way to combat it. And, you know, as great as it sounded, I just didn't know how to do that. You know, I had no idea. And that's where prayer and meditation came. And thank God I had a great sponsor who really led me through these things. But in the beginning, it was really simple. I really had to muster the courage just to have blind faith. You know, now my faith is I know. Like, I just know everything's going to be fine. I know everything's going to work out. Before, I didn't. I just went with it. I just pretended as if. You know, and doing it long enough, I saw the results, and the results are always great if I just turn it over. You know, my fear was that if I turn my life over to God and let go of these fears, that my life is going to become just crazy. Like, I'm going to, like, get in an accident. Maybe God wants me to, you know, that, or whatever the case may be. And, you know, as I said before, you know, I have to really go back into that step two and revisit what my higher power really is. And it's loving, and it's forgiving, and it's, you know, wants me to have the most amazing, incredible life. And that's the only way how I'm able to let go of these fears. And today I have, like, a really full life. I have a lot going on. My life is really full and exciting, but with that, it comes a lot of fears come, because, you know, there's a lot of unknown that's going on, and I'm very, very happy that, you know, AA gave me an incredible life, but I really would not be able to do any of those things without turning it over continuously, because anytime I hold on to my fear, I act out on it, and then whatever I do becomes part of it, step four again. I've done a few step fours, so this is coming from experience. You know, anytime I act out in fear or don't act in fear because of fear, something happens where it all of a sudden becomes part of step four, five, and a lot of the time nine. So I really have to sort of be rigorous about it, and it's hard. It takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of courage to believe in something that I don't see. But because I've already witnessed what's done in my life before and other people's, I can hold on to that faith strong enough to just kind of let the situations play out themselves without taking a drink. So I'll pass with that.
Thank you. Okay, still on page 68. Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there, but above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cries that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it, or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbitrator of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them?
Going through my inventory, there was a whole section. I had a packet that was like 15 pages thick. It was ridiculous. But my sponsor gave it to me as a guide because he knew how obscured I can make things. So it was a guide. And whenever I did all of the first half of step four, I was like, sweet, I'm done. Yes, that wasn't so bad. And then I flipped the page, and it's talking about my sex inventory. And I was like, oh, you know, this is kind of personal, don't you think? You know? So I'm reading some of these questions, and I was like, well, I mean, I'm starting to doubt myself. Did I have sex? Did I not have sex? With who? How many times? I don't know, you know. But basically what I boiled it down to was that fear led me to do the things that I wouldn't do if I wasn't drinking. For instance, you know, going out, partying with the fellas, ending up at a bar and going home with whoever is at the end of the night. You know, I would do that on a regular basis. You know, I'm not proud to say that today, but it's something that's happened, and it's part of my experience to help others. So I always put that out there just because there, you know, I'm not perfect. You know, I'm an alcoholic. I've done some pretty retarded things. So whenever it came down to talking about that to another human being, it was a little awkward. You know, I didn't even talk to my dad about sex, much less a guy that I didn't even know, you know. So with the fellas, it's totally different, though, you know. So it was the nature, my motives. It wasn't such the sex. the sex was not the issue. Kind of like today, alcohol is not the issue. It's me and the way that I process things in my head. So the sex was not the issue. It was, what were my motives behind it? Why did I feel the need to have it? And when I didn't have it, why did I look to other things to fulfill those needs? You know, that's where I had to go. That's how far it took me, you know. And once I was able to grasp the concept of why, where, when, how, what was I feeling, you know, then I was able to put, you know, some sort of connection between these emotions and these actions. So that way, when I feel these emotions today in sobriety, I don't have to act in fear and go and look for whatever's going to make me instantaneously happy. Instant gratification. That's, I love that phrase right there. Instant gratification, because that's exactly what I look for on a daily basis in active alcoholism. Whether it was sex, drugs, fast cars, fast women, it didn't matter. Made me happy, got away from all the crap in my head, and, you know, it kind of made me twinge a little bit because it was, you know, fun. Well, at least I thought it was. But it was an adrenaline rush, and that's what I always look for. So the motives, you know, those feelings and fears, those what drove me to do those actions. And knowing that today, I can replace those things. So whenever I feel this way, I can identify, okay, well, I'm feeling kind of crappy today, but I don't want to do what I've always done. So what do I do today? I call another alcoholic. When I don't feel like doing that, because there's days, I'm human, I don't feel like calling my sponsor and be like, look, man, you know, I'm feeling like crap today, and, you know, because I already know what he's going to say, you know. He's going to, we'll just leave that out. So anyways, I already know what he's going to say. So when I don't feel like calling an alcoholic, I have an AA big book at every aspect of my day, whether it's on my phone, in my car, in my work van, whatever, it's there. I turn to it. I find that if I scroll through there and look for fear, anything based on fear, Vita said that she can look in the back of one of our literature and look for the word fear, and it'll send you straight to a paragraph, straight to a part of our literature that talks about that. That's exactly what I do. Not all the time. Sometimes I like to wallow around in that emotionalism for a little while because it feels good, because I did it for so long. But whenever I'm really on edge, and I'm feeling this really strong, and that urge and temptation to go out and do these crazy things that I've always done is right there, and I can just feel it. Yes, let's go do that. You know, I have to, my buddy likes to tell me that I can't think my way into right acting. I have to act my way into right thinking. So at times when those urges are so powerful, so strong, just like the drinking first in early sobriety, when those cravings were so strong, I had to do the exact opposite of what my mind was telling me. And that's kind of a tricky thing to do, you know. So instead of going out and looking for that fast car or that speed demon on the interstate and just, you know, racing to the end of the earth, or fast women on the corners, wherever, you know, instead of doing those things, I do the exact opposite. If I'm in my car, I slow down and go the speed limit. I make sure I get on the phone and talk to another alcoholic. I make sure I open the big book, slip through that fear section and read it, and really read it. And if those things are not working, I say a simple prayer, I move on about my day and act as if it's already been taken care of. That's all I got. Thanks.
So the first time I had to do sex inventory, I really did not get what does it have to do with drinking whatsoever. I could not put two and two together because I thought I'm an amazing girlfriend and I was an amazing wife and it's his fault and all those good things. And, you know, I really, really needed this this inventory. I really needed to put, you know, put it, all the names on paper, all, you know, everything black and white and see what I brought to the relationship, whichever it was, whether it was just, you know, a drunken fling or was a serious relationship, because, eventually, like, I started seeing the patterns, and the pattern was, I choose drinking and using over the whatever relationship I have, the important one. And that's actually how I lost my marriage. And, you know, for the longest time, I projected it on him. So I really needed to see what am I bringing to the table, you know, really clearly, because I have fooled myself for so long and I played this victim role for so long that it became such a big part of me that continuously fueled my partying, my drinking. And, you know, I had pretty sort of high morals. You know, I was brought up with pretty high morals when it came to sex, and all of a sudden I wasn't able to live up to them. And that was really disappointing. It was really disappointing because I couldn't look at myself in the mirror. You know, I know, even though I project on, you know, my boyfriend or my husband, you know, that I cheated because of it's your fault, I really know in the back of my mind. I look in that mirror and I know it. And, you know, if I don't like me, I want to drink. If all that stuff puts me on the edge. I can't go, you know, I can't fall asleep because I feel guilty. You know, all these things add up, and I had no idea. I had no idea that that's what really puts me closer and closer to that drink. That drink is always, you know, sounds so great, like Danielle said, any instant gratification I will take so I don't feel the way I feel. You know, and if I keep continuing these actions, I will continuously come back to the same edge and continuously will pick up, you know. So I have to like rewind and sort of like see what one little action can really, how can it blow up and how can it take me to where I never want to go. You know, I never expected to be the person that I became. You know, it was devastating for me to really see who I was. You know, I didn't want to wake up next to a stranger and not even have no idea what happened. You know, I was during one of those, I was raped. I mean, I really needed to look at my part in it, you know, and they say, you know, that victim is like rape victim is a victim. And yes, but my part, I went to a place that I didn't know because I wanted to drink so bad. I did not care to know who was there. It was, you know, it was all about me and my drinking. And I put myself continuously in these situations. And being a girl, you know, this step was quite deep and intense for me, and I really needed to look how my own action brings chaos, you know, mistrust, and you know, broken relationships continuously over and over and over. And you know, I had to do a few inventories after I'd been in the program for a while. And you know, let me tell you, it's much harder to do it after I've been sober for a while, because this step, it just doesn't go away. I mean, I'm still a human being, you know, I still make mistakes, and, you know, I have to really learn how to accept myself, that I'm a human being, and all I need to do is continuously improve. I can't flip a switch, pray a prayer, and be perfect. That doesn't happen. It's about practice, 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 you know, and in time, it becomes so normal that, you know, this stuff, you know, all of a sudden, I wake up, I'm the person that I want to be. You know, and if I slip once in a while on whatever the case may be, I haven't had that many of experiences with this particular part, but I don't beat myself up, and this has been a process. You know, I've been so used to certain things and certain habits that they, you know, it took a while. So I just want to encourage anybody who's new, just keep on doing it. Keep on doing it. It gets so much better. It gets easy, and it becomes so normal. So I'll pass.
Okay, page 69. We reviewed our own conduct over the past, or years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed.
Yes, whenever I came down to the end of the inventory and was looking at all these things, my sponsor asked me one simple question. He said, what could you bring to a relationship, an honest relationship, and what do you think you can become in that relationship, and what do you think the other person wants to see in you as their partner in a relationship? And that was a pretty hard question for me to answer. I mean, all those questions. It was pretty hard for me to answer that because I never looked at myself that way. I never looked at myself as being someone's partner, period, in life. You know, I could barely take care of myself in life, much rather be responsible for somebody else, you know. So I think that those questions took me longer to figure out and write down than it did my inventory. But whenever I was able to look at myself in the mirror one morning and tell myself that I'm not that bad of a guy, those things that I did were things that I did. I'm not doing them today. When I stopped using myself and my past as a whipping post and started using it as experience of what not to do, that's whenever I can move forward. So whenever I was able to answer those questions honestly and openly with my sponsor, you know, he was like, all right, that sounds pretty good. I'm not going to go into detail with all that kind of stuff. But, you know, he was like, all right, now tell me what you think your partner should be in those same categories. Well, of course, that was easy for me to do. Why not? I can tell you anything about you you need to know, you know. And so I was like, all right, give me about 5 minutes, you know, start jotting down. And he was like, well, that seems a little bit easier, doesn't it? And I was like, of course it is. I'm telling some, you know, telling about somebody else. I'm not talking about me. The focus is not on me. It's on that person. Which, obviously, the focus was on me. And, you know, if I want to look at somebody in a relationship, and whether it's sexual, whatever, obviously there's going to be some sort of attraction at first. You know, that's what's going to draw me to that person. But once I'm in a relationship, how do I make that relationship last? How do I make that, you know, without my alcoholic tendencies, my retarded past, my character defects just flowing into this relationship and screwing things up like they've always done in the past? Instead of me harnessing all the bad things that I did and putting that into the relationship, what can I do now? How do I act in a relationship? You know, and at first it was just trying to do something as friends. You know, I had to learn how to be a friend in a friendship. You know, in early sobriety, I didn't even know how to do that right. You know, I would manipulate you and use you and, you know, I need a ride here and we're going to go. You know, and then, you know, that wasn't obviously the right thing to do, so I had to be told that. You know, but I've done that kind of stuff for so long, it's hard to get out of those habits. But luckily, I was surrounded by a really good, blunt group of guys, and they told me when I was retarded and when I wasn't. And I never had to apologize for anything. You know, they were always like, you know, look, we understand where you're coming from, but you're being retarded, all right? Don't do that. All right, I get it. You know, so I had to start with friendships. You know, going to meetings, learning how to, you know, not necessarily shake a hand. I knew how to do that from Texas, for Christ's sake. You know, but, you know, look another human being in the eye and ask you how your day was going and actually pay attention to what the heck you were saying. You know, instead of thinking of ways I can use you for something. You know, sincerity in my conversations, and returning the same thing. You know, if someone asks me how I'm doing, I'm going to be sincere and open and think that they really want to know, so I'm going to let them know. You know, if I feel like crap, I feel like crap. If I don't, it's cool. But the thing is that I had to start somewhere, and friendship is where it was. Once I was able to learn how to become a friend to somebody, then I can start learning how to be a boyfriend, a husband, a father. And in my life, I was already the boyfriend, the half-husband, because we weren't married yet, but I had 2 kids, you know. So I already had to be the father, and I had no idea how to do that. I thought I did. I was obviously wrong. But, you know, teaching my kids how to act right is kind of hard to do when myself doesn't even know how to act right, you know. So I had to get myself in check before I could help anybody else. When it comes down to just everything about the relationship and moving forward in the program, my sponsor told me, don't overthink it. You know, you're going to overthink it. You're going to screw it up. Don't put too much thought process into it. Do what you think is right. If it's wrong, then you'll talk about it. You move forward. You grow. That's the only way to grow in a relationship, in a friendship, in my program, is I have to allow myself to make mistakes and not beat myself up over them. Now, the mistakes that I make today are not as detrimental as they were in the past. I will tell you that. But I do make mistakes. I'm a human being, and I'm an alcoholic. You know, those tendencies are not going to go away overnight. You know, I didn't get screwed up overnight. I'm not going to get fixed overnight. It's going to take time. So, with that, that's all I got.
So, when I came in, I came in with a certain, you know, perception of what relationships are for me, and I never thought it out. I never wrote out any ideals. I just kind of ran with the flow, you know. And the more I drank, the more my my standards went lower and lower and lower, because, you know, I didn't think I deserve anything. I thought I deserved to be treated crap, and, you know, it wasn't subconscious. It wasn't in my conscience. In my conscience, I was like, I'm it. I'm super. I'm amazing. In my subconscious was telling me completely something else, and I was putting myself in these relationships where, you know, I was coming in with thinking, what can I get out of it? First of all, that was a first mistake. Second, I was getting into these relationships with people who ultimately did disrespect me and use me. And in turn, I felt justified to do the same. So all of a sudden, you know, I am in continuous chaos year after year after year. And all I think of life is, this is how it is. This is what relationships are. So, I had to really, took me a while to relearn these things. It took me a while to really look into my part that, am I arguing because I want to win the argument? You know, what is that? Because it was continuous competition. You know, I wanted to win the argument no matter what it was, so I can justify my behavior later on. Today, it's quite different. Today is, what am I bringing to it? What can I bring to this relationship? Is this a person that I actually want to be with, that's going to fulfill my life, and can I fulfill their life? But ultimately, the biggest difference today for me is, if there is an argument, if there is a problem, you know, I focus on solution, how to fix it, instead of who is right and who is wrong. You know, because nothing was fixed before. Nothing. It was just, we argue, something goes down, we run to different bars, do make a lot of mistakes, and then we just sweep it under the rug the next day. Nothing was fixed. Nothing was learned. It was continued, just like snowball effect, until it all blows in each other's face, and it's complete mess, and I could not believe that it was just one after another, and third and fourth relationship. I could not understand, you know, how do I get into these? Why am I such a, you know, like, victim? And for me, you know, how are they treating me when I in turn treat them exactly the same? And this was really like life-changing experience, because no matter what the relationship is, like Danielle said, whether it's a friendship, whether it's a, you know, professional relationship, romantic relationship, whichever it is, today I focus, if there is a problem, focusing, finding a solution. It doesn't matter whether I'm right or wrong. Like, my opinion is not as important for me anymore. And, you know, so far it's been really, like, producing way better results and much more fulfilling friendships and relationships overall. And, you know, all of a sudden I wake up being around people that I can trust. And they love me. And if there's something going on, they will be there for me. They will not, you know, it's a complete, you know, 180 from where I came from. But it took, like, little by little to change that perception from where I was. And it's incredible that now I can see the world differently, that there are incredible relationships. There are great people there out there. You know, but in turn, I have to be match that too. You know, if I want to be with a great person, if I want to be, you know, want to have a great friend, if I want to have a great relationship with a parent or with a relative, I have to match that as well. I have to put in what I want to get out. So I'll pass with that.
Okay, we're still on page 69. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in doing so, or in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice.
Hysterical thinking. I don't even know what that means. You know, I'm in a relationship right now with a woman that has stuck by me for almost 8 years. Why, I have no clue. How, I have no clue either, because I couldn't do it. You know, but she has. She's been with me through the intense times of my drinking to the most sobering days of my life. And, you know, I was never a big person on counseling or therapy. It's always put a bad taste in my mouth for some reason. But it's funny, whenever you open your mind up to new things, like I would always tell her, you know, well, you got to have open-mindedness, babe. You know, come on, how are we going to get anywhere if you're not open to new things? You know, and she was like, well, let's try couples counseling. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know about that. But babe, you got to be open to new things.
Oh, God.
All right. So anyways, we go to couples counseling, and it's trying at times, but relieving at most. My sponsor has told me that there's going to come a time in my sobriety where I'm going to have to get outside counsel or outside help in order to take care of certain things in my life. And I thought he was full of it. I was like, well, 30 years of wisdom right there. You got it. I'm good. And no, I'm not. Although he has 30 years of sobriety, there's things that he's just not going to work, you know. I need outside help. And so going to counseling, we went on this dry spell of non-sexual activity for a couple of months, and it was kind of worrying me because, you know, I don't know, I'm a guy. So in therapy, I'm like, she will not have sex with me. I think she's beaten, you know, taking this as, you know, this is your punishment for all the crap that you put me through before. And I was like, that's what I think. Hysterical thinking? I don't know. But obviously that wasn't the fact or the situation. But the thing is that going to counseling and opening up to mediation, I like to call it mediation, I don't like to call it therapy. Because like Vida was saying, me, I'm pretty hard-headed and stubborn, and my girl, she's nice. So we're like two rams in a freaking, you know, just going at it, and it's not cool because nothing gets solved. There's no solution whatsoever, and we're both right. So with mediation, I've learned that I don't even know who the heck she is sometimes. And at times, she doesn't know who the hell I am. Excuse my language. She doesn't know who the heck I am. You know, I've shown her a person that was drunk 90% of the time, you know, and hung over the other 10%, you know. She has no clue who I am. I didn't even know who I was. So in order for us to get on common ground and get to know each other a little bit better than 8 years of just whatever, We had to have outside help. We went to counseling. I do one-on-one counseling. And I'm telling you, it's changed the way that I perceive our relationship. It's changed the way that I look at her as my girlfriend. It's changed the way that I look at her as a mother to my kids. The sex portion of our relationship is intimate, and it means something today. It's not just, we had a fight. You know what happens next. Let's do this. Yes. No. It means something. It's heartfelt and it's loving. It's not something that's taken for granted today. And that's something that I've never had or heard of in my entire life. I'm sure my parents are intimate. I don't want to know. But for me, with another female, I've never felt that way. I've never had that connection. I've never looked at it from that point of view. And like I said, until I was able to have a little bit of willingness to grow in different areas of my life and have a little bit of open-mindedness, like my sponsor said that I had to have when I first came into this program, well, now the drinking obsession is gone. I don't have a desire to drink today. But it doesn't mean that my life is completely 100% peachy, you know, rainbows and unicorns all over the place. No, it just means that I have to look at other areas of my life and see where I can try to have progression in those areas. You know, I love in our literature how it says that we strive for progress, spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Because I'm never, ever, ever going to be perfect in anything that I do in my life. And that's fine with me today. Before, if you would ask me that, I was doing everything perfect. You know, I'm a perfect guy, dude. She's lucky. You know what I'm saying? But today, I know that I'm not perfect. I have failings on a daily basis. But that's okay. Because I'm learning different ways to grow in different aspects of my life. In relationships being the most thing in my life that was always so detrimental for her and me. Well, mainly for her, but not, you know. Learning how to cope with another human being, you know, is where I had to start. Sponsorship. It's a great way to learn how to cope with another human being. You have to talk to another man, or a woman has to talk to another woman about you. Wow. Wonder who thought of that. Anyways, that's how I learned how to open up to another man. And then I had to learn how to talk to women the correct way. You know, I was raised correctly. I just didn't all sink in there. And so things had to be retaught. I had to relearn. You know, they say that old dogs can't learn new tricks. I mean, I'm not that old, but I can still learn new tricks. So as long as I have a desire to grow in anything that I do today, whether it be my program, my relationship, me being a father to my kids, or whatever, better, you know, coworker, whatever it is, as long as I have that willingness and open-mindedness that I had whenever I came into this program, so wanting the desire of the drink to be lifted, then those same efforts would be put into those same aspects of my life. Thanks.
So it says, whatever our ideals turned out to be, we must be willing to go to grow towards it. And you know, I used to make up these ideals for my partners, and I really didn't. You know, I can do whatever I want, but you have to grow into it. You have to. I'm okay. And somehow I just grew up thinking I'm so special. I should be able to get away with things, but you have to be honest and earn money and bring it home, not spend it anywhere, which, you know, don't cheat, be nice to me, and just carry me on your hands like I'm a princess. But I was not willing to return that because I was special. You know, somehow, in some way, shape, or form, I picked up this notion that I am special, you know. And so it wasn't working out very well because, you know, they were not really reciprocating. And, you know, that created a lot of problems and chaos. So I really did not like the fact that I had to learn to be the person that I want my partner to be. And, you know, just it's hard. You have to do things, actually, to, you know, make this life happy or make this life good in some way. And the next part is making amends where we had done harm. And I can tell you, I was a pretty honest person because when I cheated, it was weighing on my conscience so much that I just didn't care. Like, I didn't want to carry it anymore, so I just blurted it out. Like, I'm just going to tell you because I feel so crappy. And whatever, you know, happens after that, I don't even care. And, you know, completely missed the part that, you know, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in doing so. So even in doing a greatest act, I managed to turn, twist it, and make it about me. Make it about myself. And, you know, today I really have to look into that. Am I trying to clear out my conscience on something and completely avoid doing the job work that I need to be doing on myself by, you know, just kind of throwing it out there and saying that I'm disabled, I can't, you know, do this, and you're going to have to forgive me, and I continue on sort of, you know, doing the same thing over and over again. And, you know, so this was a big learning experience. And this is more on, I guess, step 8 and 9, where, you know, we put on, you know, I put a lot of people on that list, a lot of guys that I wanted to make amends, just because I was feeling so crappy that finally now I learned, now I see that I was kind of a crappy person and I really need to get rid of that, like, ASAP. And for me, it was, let me just go and tell you everything what happened so I feel better. And it's not about that, you know, it's about, I need to make a change, make those living amends. I need to become that person that I, you know, that you know, I see myself that I'm not, you know, and instead of going and hurting them even more, what I've already done. You know, and the greatest thing about this program is, for me, in my eyes, is sponsorship, you know, as far as the relationships go. You know, I have amazing friends in the program, and I love talking to them. I love getting advice, because we all try to live under the same sort of a, you know, roof of love and tolerance and honesty. You know, we try to base our solutions to certain problems on these three principles. And but sponsor can be more objective. You know, back in the day, the only people I would counsel was people who would agree with me. And if you don't, I am out of there. You're not my friend. It's either you say yes for everything, and we were right, or I'm out. This friendship is over. And today I am able to listen. You know, and you know, I had a little problem this morning, and a relationship problem, of course. And I called and messaged three people. You know, I talked, and my first was, what do you think? Like, what am I doing? What is my part in here? What am I doing wrong? Like, and, you know, what is my part if I don't see it yet? And that this is incredible improvement. I actually care. That's amazing, you know, in itself. And the only reason I care is because when I start caring and doing these things, I am happier. You know, my life is fuller. My life is happier. So it's not, you know, it's not all about other people. I'm still selfish, but it's in the way where, you know, their life is better. Their life is enriched, and mine in return as well. You know, I learned one thing in the program, when it comes to relationships, I don't get to be crappy to other people and be happy. I don't get that, you know. I need to be nice. I need to be, and in return, no matter if they hurt me, no matter what they do, my life is still happy. You know, I can have a pain about something. I can have like a painful situation. It doesn't change how my life overall is as a big picture. I am happy, where before it was not so. You know, I wouldn't have come to the program if I wouldn't have come here if my life would have been happy. So, you know, continuous improvement. All best.
Thank you. So we're going to finish up. We'll have just a couple of minutes for each of you guys to finish up. Page 70. To sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from Him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. That being said, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself.
So the idea behind doing the fourth step for me was to get rid of all the things that I did and move forward. Learn from what my actions, how my fears and everything allowed me to do those actions, what the motives were. But what I didn't realize was that there was a spiritual answer to all of this. You know, I turned these things over to another human being in my higher power, and they're done. It's over. That's a chapter closed. The next book that's going to be written is me in sobriety, and I have to keep it that way. Because if I don't, I'll go back and, you know, beat myself up over everything that I've ever done. You know, and it's very easy for me to do that. So the thing that I have to do, just like it says in here, you know, whenever I have those urges, like I said earlier, when I have those urges to do the things that I've always done, I have to do the exact opposite. I have to, you know, say a prayer, I have to go to a meeting, I have to call somebody. And I've got numerous numbers in my phone. They all start with A. And, you know, it's unbelievable that the fellowship, if I have the willingness to do so, and the open-mindedness to accept it, then the fellowship is out there. The help is here. I just have to be, you know, not so stubborn and ask for help. You know, I'm never going to get anywhere in this program if I don't open my mouth and say, this is what's happening, this is what's going on, what do I do about it? You know, and I always get answers. It may not be answers that I like, but they're answers. And most of the times, the answers that I don't like are the right answers. So I turn these things over to my higher power. I move on about my day. I go into my, you know, I move on about my program as well. And I learn instead of repeating the past. Thanks.
So, you know, at the very end of my first step, step four and five, I guess, it was really painful to see how much I actually hurt other people, you know, because I was playing such a big victim role for so long, and it you know, allowed me to do the things you know, that I wanted to do and run after every feeling that I've had, every urge and everything. And all of a sudden I had to really, you know, I had to look at it. What did I bring to this world? You know, I was always part of a problem. You know, I was always part of a problem. And this is where the desire to be part of the solution came from. You know, this is where I realized that it's not only about drinking. It is my thinking, my acting, my attunement only with the physical world and no spirituality whatsoever. This is where the desire to continue on, to grab onto this program came, because I wanted to be part of a solution. You know, I know it feels good. I know it brings me happiness and joy and this freedom that I didn't have at that time. You know, I had a glimpses of it when I first came in the program, but this is where I really saw where that problem lies and where all the stuff starts stemming from. And, you know, it was the most difficult thing I've ever done in my life. It really was, you know, but I think my desperation was bigger than my fear, that I was able to, was willing to go through this process. And I cannot tell you how incredibly happy I am. It was such a relief once I did it. And I'm proud of myself that I actually was willing to go ahead and look at it. And, you know, it's hard to explain to newcomers how life gets improved, how it changes, how things change and go from this darkness to eventually, like, turn into light, because you got to experience it for yourself. This program is extremely spiritual. You know, how did these two people came together and made this happen when the problem of drinking was, you know, for so on without the solution? And, you know, so I'm extremely grateful. And through this process, I started becoming part of a solution. And hopefully I'll stick to it. I'll try. Okay, thanks. I'll pass with that.
Thank you very much. Right. At this time, we're going to pass the seventh tradition basket. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While AA, or while contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. And are there any AA-related announcements?
Jesse Alcoholic.
Hey, Jesse.
Downtown Sober is having a workshop of Spring into Action. April 11th at 11 o'clock. There'll be a potluck with three speakers speaking on 10, 11, and 12. So if you need any more, information, send me up to me.
All right. Thank you. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Will all home group members please raise your hand? Thank you. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days that would like to introduce themselves so we can get to know you? If you'll just raise your hand and give us your first name.
John Paul, day 23.
Hey, John Paul. Welcome.
Welcome.
In the back.
I'm James in Double O.
Hey, James. Welcome.
Hey, Garrett, welcome.
I'm Randall, I'm
the book. Randall, welcome. Anyone else? Yes.
Alan, welcome.
I'm glad you're here. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, if you'll raise your hand? So see one of us after the meeting if you're interested in what sponsorship is all about. We'll also have two people up at the table tonight, Ryan and Rick. And they'll be up here. If you have any questions about sponsorship, feel free to come up and speak to them after the meeting. And smokers, please use the buck can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. The church also uses this facility on this evening, so we want to kind of keep the smoke away from entering the building. All meetings are audio recorded. This meeting was tonight. Our event last weekend with Bob and Valerie has been uploaded. It's on the website, simpleactions.net. In a day or two, probably this will be, so feel free to check it out if you weren't able to attend the event last weekend. It was really awesome. We are really glad to have them all, both of them here. And now, if y'all will help me thank our speakers tonight. Please feel free at the end of the meeting to come up and speak to them individually and just thank them for tonight. It's really wonderful that this meeting can continue and we can have people that are willing to come up here and sit at the table and take us through the steps. So just coming up and speak to them, that'd be great. In closing, thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight, which was step four. Come back next week and we'll do 5, 6, and 7. And tonight, the meeting after the meeting, this group goes out to dinner afterwards, and we'll be going to Plaza del Sol down Colonial Avenue on 22nd Street. If you go across the railroad tracks, you've gone too far. little Mexican joint there, and we really have a good time. Do I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on 164? Evan?
My name is Evan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Evan.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you could do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourselves to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll close with the Lord's Prayer for those that care to join.
Y'all got it.
Sort of a circle.
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Kingdom come, thy will be done on earth.